Okay, let's start again. So what we were saying was, if we say the Hanukkah is not the festival of lights, so we need to understand what Hanukkah is the festival of. And to begin doing so, I want to start. I put it on the screen. I also sent out on the WhatsApp group a PDF with sources for this evening's shiur. And I want to start at a very famous, kind of a famous point of departure for many discussions of Hanukkah, which is the Rambam in Hilchot Megillah v'Chanukah. He lumps the two of them together because we're talking about two late holidays, two mitzvot derabanan. So the first half is Hilchot Megillah, the second half is Hilchot Chanukah. The third parak is where he begins Hilchot Chanukah, and the Rambam begins Hilchot Chanukah with a little bit of the background of Chanukah. And the first three halachot, the first three passages, paragraphs in the Rambam, is where he begins to just give us a broad overview of what Chanukah is all about. And he starts with the history, and he says the following. B'bayit sheni k'shemalchu Yavan, during the Second Temple period, when Yavan, when Greece were reigning, when they had in charge essentially, gazru gzeirot al Yisrael, they decreed many decrees against the Jewish people. Bitlu datam, they abolished their religion. Velo inicho otam lasok b'torah v'mitzvot, they did not allow them to engage in Torah or mitzvot. And the Rambam continues, and hashtu yadam b'mamonam u'b'b'notehem v'nichnesu lahichalu partzu bo pratzot. They went into the temple and they violated it in all kinds of ways. Timu ta'arot, they defiled things that had been pure. V'tzar lahem liyisrael ma'od mipneihem. And it was very, the Jews were very, very troubled. The Jews were very, very oppressed by this. V'lachatzum lachatz gadol, and they were, again, deeply, deeply oppressed. Ad shirichem aleihem Elohei avoteihem, Elohei avoteinu, actually, the Rambam says, v'hoshi'am mi'adam v'hitzilam. And finally, God saved them. V'gavru b'nei chashmonai ha-kohanim ha-gadolim v'haragum. And the children of chashmonai, who were the high priests, they gained power and they killed them, the Greeks, obviously. V'hoshi'u Yisrael mi'adam. They rescued the Jewish people from their hands. And the Rambam continues, v'ha'emidu melech min ha-kohanim. This is the first paragraph in the Rambam's introduction of Hilchot Chanukah. So he starts by telling us essentially the first part or one part of the story of Chanukah. The second paragraph, Halacha Bet, again on the screen in front of you, the Rambam says, and when the Jewish people did indeed prevail over their enemies and destroy them, it was on the 25th day of the month of Kislev, and here's the story that we know, they entered into the sanctuary, the Heichal, the Beit HaMikdash, and they only found one little jug, one little cruise flask of pure oil, and there was only sufficient oil to light for a single day. However, says Rambam, but they actually lit with it for 8 days, until they were able to crush olives and express pure oil, produce pure oil. So here in Halacha Aleph and Halacha Bet, we have what is essentially two aspects of the Chanukah story, right? And these are kind of known to us. In other words, when we talk about Chanukah, we often talk about the two miraculous aspects of the Chanukah story. The more famous one, or I don't know, the more popularly recounted one, let's say, is of course what the Rambam puts in Halacha Bet, which is the story of the oil that burned for 8 days. But Halacha Aleph is also obviously very famous and very important and a very central part of Chanukah, because it tells a story of the victory of the Jewish people of Bnei Israel over the Greeks, right? The Greeks, we know historically, were the Seleucid Greeks, that the empire of Alexander was divided into four parts, right? The Seleucids were the ones who were ruling over Syria and over Eretz Israel, and they were involved in a little bit of a rivalry with the Greek empire, the Greek kingdom to the south of them, the Ptolemies, and that's a little bit of backdrop here. But in any case, the victory over the Greeks is the other important part. And that's what we make reference to in when we say Al-Nisim, right? We talk about more about the victory and less about the candles. However, what's interesting in the Rambam, if you pay attention to this first paragraph, is that it's not just about the victory. The Rambam, you know, we often talk about the Rambam as emphasizing the victory and the miracle of the oil, giving them equal weight. But the truth is, it's not just the victory. If you look at the last line, let's say the last two words, the second to last line of the Rambam, the last full line of the Rambam, he says it's not just about the fact that the forces of the Jewish people defeated a vastly larger and a vastly better equipped and a vastly better trained army of Seleucid Greeks. But it's more than that, says the Rambam. Look at these last words. V'chazra malchut liYisrael yeter al matayim shana. This is what's important. It's not just about the victory, but it's about what happened in the aftermath of the victory. Chazra hamalchut liYisrael, that sovereignty returns, or sovereignty returns to the Jewish people for more than 200 years. And this is also a very famous and oft-quoted line in the Rambam, that it's not just that we won the war, but it's that we won the war and reinstated Jewish sovereignty. And historically, this is basically the last time there's Jewish sovereignty, you know, for an extended period of time over Eretz Yisrael until 1948. So that's really, you know, obviously a big deal. And 200 years of Jewish sovereignty. But then the Rambam tags on three words at the very end of that first paragraph, the very end of Halakha Aleph, that to me problematize it a little bit. What does he say? Again, what are the last three words? Ad ha-churban ha-sheni. Until the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. So the Rambam here, he emphasizes the victory, and he emphasizes the military dimension. And he emphasizes the reinstitution of Jewish sovereignty over Eretz Yisrael, both of which are obviously important and noteworthy and miraculous. But then he tags three words on to the end of that first halakha that change the tenor a little bit, at least to me when I read it. Maybe, I don't know if you agree or don't agree with me, but when I read the Rambam and I see that he adds, Ad ha-churban ha-sheni, until the second Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, what he's telling me is that the sovereignty that was established by the Hashmonaim was not necessarily long-lasting. You know, in the greater scheme of things, when you look at the larger picture, what's 200 years in the picture of the history of humanity? What's 200 years in the history of Am Yisrael? You know, so to tell me that the sovereignty lasted for 200 years, and then to tell me, by the way, it ended with the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, maybe a little bit before that, the Hasmonean dynasty ended, you know, somewhat before the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. But what you're essentially telling me, again, what I feel is that he adds like a little bit of a melancholy dimension to what otherwise seems to be celebratory. In fact, when he continues with Halacha Bet, he talks about the oil. Halacha Gimel, he talks about celebration, right? And this is still part of the overview. Mipnei zeh, if you look at the screen, we're on the third paragraph now of the Rambam. Umipnei zeh hitkinu chachamim shebaoto hador shehiyu shmonat hayamim ha'elu shetchilatam milah chamesh v'esrim b'kislev yimei simcha v'halel, right? So because of these great miracles, the sages of that generation instituted that these 8 days, which begin on the 25th of Kislev, should be days of simcha, of halel, day umadlikin bahen haneirot ba'erev al pitchei abatim. Again, when we read the Rambam, I'm always trying to read it. We always read Rambam carefully, right? That's a yeshiva thing to do. So when we read the Rambam here too, we should read it very, very carefully. Madlikim bahem haneirot, right? He says, and part of the celebration of Hanukkah is the joy, and it's the halel, the thanksgiving. And we light candles in the evening on the entryway to the houses. B'chol laila v'laila mishmonat halelot, for each evening of those 8 evenings, l'harot u'legalot hanes, to demonstrate and to show the nes. So first of all, the Rambam here, even though, again, he seems to end Halacha Aleph on a somewhat melancholy note, he comes back and makes it a little bit more joyful and tells us that these are days of joy and celebration. But what's interesting to me here as well, I have a second question. So we have our first question about why does he end Halacha Aleph on a melancholy note? And now, here too, in Halacha Gimel, I have a question. And my question is this. As I said before, this is sort of the Rambam's broad, general overview of Hilchot Chanukah. And he gives us, you know, again, some broad sketches. He tells us that these are days of Simcha, but he doesn't define what the nature of the Simcha is. These are days of Halel, which, you know, means Thanksgiving, but he doesn't exactly get into the details. Umadlikim Bahem Neirot, which sounds like, again, a general thing by Erev. But then he gives us one detail that would seem to be out of place here in terms of the broad overview. What's the detail? Al Pitchei HaBatim, that we light candles on or next to the entryway to our homes. Now, when I read this halacha Gimel of the Rambam, I read it as part of a continuity with Halachot Aleph and Bet, as part of the general overview, before he gets into the specific halachic details and obligations and how exactly we're meant to perform the mitzvot of Chanukah. Here he's giving an overview. So it would seem to me And again, this is my personal inclination. I don't know if you read it this way, that throwing in this line about Al Pitchei Abatim, the precise placement of the Hanukkah candles, might be a little bit extraneous, meaning you would think that starting Halacha Daled, which is obviously not on the source sheet in front of us, the Rambam is going to start detailing the various, halachot of Hilchot Chanukah. So that's where it should belong, right? The notion of where exactly we place the Chanukah candles, you would think that it would belong there in Halacha Daled. But the Rambam instead puts it here in Halacha Gimel as part of the broad overview, which tells me that the fact that the candles, the Ner Chanukah, is placed al pitchei batim on the entryway of the homes is not just a detail, and it's not just one of the many details that we're going to find in Hilchot Chanukah about how and when and in what manner we light the Chanukah candles, but there's something fundamental about that particular detail, the fact that the Chanukah candles are lit al pitchei batim, that transcends any of the other details of Hilchot Chanukah. These are just two sort of insights to questions about the Rambam's overview to Hilchot Chanukah. One is, again, why does he end Halacha Aleph on this melancholy note telling us about the Churban of the Beit HaMikdash? And two is, why in Halacha Gimel, when he's giving us, again, an overview of the Halachot and an overview of the practices of Chanukah, does he add this one detail about where exactly we place the Ner Chanukah, where exactly we place the Chanukah candles? I think that an understanding of the theology or the thought behind Ner Chanukah, the philosophy, however you want to say it, behind Ner Chanukah will help us understand a little bit and help clarify these points in the Rambam for us. To begin to understand this, I want to look at probably the most fundamental statement about the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, which is now on your sheet, conveniently listed under the heading of Understanding Ner Chanukah. So I'm going to move this up a little bit on the screen. And this is the Braita, the famous Braita, where the rabbis lay out the obligation to light Ner Chanukah, what the nature of the obligation is. So what's the most basic obligation? As you can see, I didn't give you the whole thing. I didn't give you the Mahadrin and the Mahadrin min HaMahadrin, and I didn't give you the Machloket between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel about how exactly, we add or subtract, nor did I give you the subsequent Machloket of Rishonim and Achronim as to how exactly we are meant to light our Hanukkah candle. I simply gave you the most basic, pared-down, fundamental halacha mitzvah of Chanukah, which is as follows. Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbis taught in a Braita, mitzvat Chanukah, ner, ish, ubeito. That the most basic, most fundamental obligation of Chanukah candles is ner, ish, ubeito. And what I want to do is take that statement of Chazal, where they basically present to us the most, like I said, the most fundamental, most basic, without any addition or elaboration, obligation of lighting Ner Chanukah. And I want to parse that statement very, very carefully. I want to take it apart almost word by word. In other words, mitzvah Chanukah. What is the mitzvah of Chanukah? There are three words, but those three words contain two clauses. What are the two clauses? The first clause is ner. The second clause is ish ubeito. And I think if we discuss each one individually and we see how those two clauses interact with each other, how they work together, we'll come up with a broader understanding and a fundamental understanding of what the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is all about. And then I hope it'll help enrich, now that we're at least here in Israel, we're halfway through Chanukah, we're at night number four right now. So I hope it'll help enrich, our Chanukah for the next 4 to 4.5 to 5 days as we celebrate and as we understand really what we're doing each and every night and what we're trying to accomplish. And it'll also, I think, ultimately give us some light, help us shed some light on the Rambam. So I want to learn the Rambam. And by the way, along the way, we're going to hope to encounter some other, some cool things along the way. We're going to do some learning, some Gemara, some philosophy, some history, maybe even some archaeology if we have time. Let's see. All in the matter of the next, I don't know, 25, 20 to 25 minutes or so. Okay. Let's understand this statement. Again, mitzvah Chanukah, ner, is Statement number one. Ishu beito is statement number two. What do we mean by ner? So ner, and this is where we come into this question of whether Hanukkah is indeed the festival of quote-unquote lights. The Gemara says the following. You know, after talking about ner Hanukkah and giving a lot of details, the Gemara now comes to an interesting question, a scenario. It's a halachic scenario, which is as follows. We're under the heading ner, and we are on the first source, which is the Gemara, Masechet Shabbat, Daf Chaf Gimel Amud Bet, a little line and a half excerpt. The Gemara says, Amar Rava, Rava says, Milei Ke'ara Shemen, if a person filled up a dish with oil, V'hikifa Ptilot, and then they basically lined up some wicks in a circle within that dish of oil, what is the halacha? Kafa Le'akli, if you put some sort of kli over it, which will separate the wicks from each other, then Ola L'kama B'nei Adam, then numerous people, assuming that one person, you know, again, we're following Ner Ish Beito, that you light one candle each night of Hanukkah, so that dish is sufficient for a number of different people, each to light their own candle in the dish, right? Because the wicks are now separated from each other and it looks like separate flames. That's if kafale atakli, if you found some way to separate the wicks from each other. However, the Gemara continues, last two words of that first line, lo kafale akli, if you did not put some sort of kli, some sort of utensil over it, asa'a kemin midura, then it's like a midura, and then even one person is not yotze. Again, it's not sufficient for even a single person to be yotze their mitzvah that way. In other words, what we're saying is as follows, that the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, the opposite of Ner Chanukah, is a midura. What's a midura? A midura is a bunch of wicks burning together in a single dish of oil. When you have a number of flames that are burning together, presumably interacting with each other, that is not acceptable, not kosher for Ner Chanukah. You're not yotze your mitzvah of Ner Chanukah in that way. Even a single person, right, it says, is not yotze their mitzvah if it is a midura. Right now, if you look, I just gave you on the sheet so you can understand that this is not just, you know, the Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch paskins this at length, right? By the way, just looking at the Shulchan Aruch, you get just even a sense of the way that people were lighting candles in the time of the, you know, in the time of the Rishonim. So what do you say? If you fill the dish with oil and you put a bunch of wicks inside, or presumably along the edge, again, he quotes the Gemara, if you covered it, then each wick counts as a single ner. Lo kafala kli, but if you didn't put some sort of, you know, utensil over it, then afil ner echad eina ola, lefrishu kimidura. So the Shulchan Aruch is telling us that you can't have a medura. You cannot, the medura, which is multiple wicks burning in a single dish of oil, you're not yotze ner Chanukah. Hagah, the Ramah continues. Therefore, they should be on the same level. V'lo be'igul, right? Not in a circle. Dahave kemedura. However, mutar la'adlik b'pamotot shekorim lampa, me'achar shekol ner muvdal harbe me'chaviro. You know what pamotot shekorim lampa is? If you ever seen one of those pictures of the Jewish homes in Germany or in certain parts of, you know, Ashkenazi countries where they hung these Shabbos lamps that kind of had these different parts sticking out. It kind of looked like a star if you looked at it from underneath. So the Rama is telling us that you're allowed to do that even though they're not in a straight line, because it's each one is separate from the other, and it's clear then that we're talking about a variety of different candles rather than, you know, one medura, one big mush of candles together. Now, what's interesting then, what's important for us in our discussion is the fact that a medura is not sufficient. That a medura, a group of candles together, you're not yotze ner Chanukah. And the question is, why are you not yotze ner Chanukah with a medura? You would think that if the idea is to shed light, if the idea is to create some sort of light, one candle is good. A bunch of candles should be even better, right? I gave just for people who are, you know, learning Daf Yomi, a little, you know, Psachim also, right? Sometimes too much light is a bad thing, right? The Gemara says, this is with the first verse on top of the page here, Ein bokin lo lor achama v'lo lor alvana v'lo lor avuka, right? When you do the search for chametz, you can't use sunlight, moonlight, or an avuka. Avuka is a torch. Again, a large flame. Ela lo or haner, mepnei she or hayer ner, yafel b'dika. Right, so what the Gemara of Pesachim is telling us is, what's good about the Or HaNer? light of a specific candle rather than an avukah, than a torch, than a larger flame, is that it's good for searching. It's good for precision. But the Gemara actually then has to justify why the light of an avukah is insufficient. The Gemara in Pesachim specifically, for the purpose of the Bedikat Chametz, has to tell us why a larger flame is not okay. When it comes to Chanukah, it's taken as a given that a large flame is not acceptable as Ner Chanukah. And the question is, why is a large flame not acceptable as Ner Chanukah? Again, if we sort of assume our cultural language, Chanukah is the festival of lights, then shouldn't... I don't know how many of you back, 15 or so, maybe even more than that years ago, were watching The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. More than 15 years ago, probably closer to 20 years ago. So in Jon Stewart's early days, Jon Stewart is a sort of a comedian in the Woody Allen mode, right? Where being Jewish means you kvetch and make fun of yourself. So one of the things that they made fun of incessantly on his show was Chanukah. So he had one scene where one of the other correspondents who's not Jewish is interviewing him about what is Chanukah. Oh, Chanukah is a festival of lights. And he cuts to a picture of a house. I grew up in Brooklyn, so a house like in Bay Ridge, these houses were covered, a house in Mill Basin. These houses were unbelievably, bedecked with lights during the winter season. And he goes, so clearly this is a house celebrating Hanukkah, right? And he goes, no, that's not a house celebrating Hanukkah, that's a house celebrating Christmas. So they cut to the next house, similar thing, right? Reindeer and whatever, all kinds of things lighting up the house. So this is a house celebrating Hanukkah, festival of lights. And no, that's not. Can you show us what a house celebrating Hanukkah looks like? And it's a house, right? Completely dark, except for one menorah in the window. Like, okay, I guess that's kind of light. I think that's some light. But a real understanding of what Chanukah is about helps us understand, again, going back to the title this year, that it's not really the festival of lights. So what is it the festival of? A little bit of history. A little bit of history, I think, will help us understand why we're not looking for torches or medurot or other large-scale conflagrations to light up the night on Chanukah. What's the history of Chanukah? And this is where I get back to what I said at the beginning, for those of you who are here, this other very provocative thing. What if the Greeks really won? What do I mean, what if the Greeks really won? What I mean is as follows. We all know that, of course, under the leadership of the Hashmonaim, the Jews defeated the forces of the Seleucid Greeks. We know that. We all know that Antiochus, despite his attempt to put religious decrees on the Jewish people and the terrible toll that it took on the Jews, ultimately was not successful in repressing Judaism. However, here's something we don't talk about. The Seleucid Empire, the Greeks, the Ptolemies, the various Greek kingdoms that centered around Eretz Israel, did they go away? Did they disappear after the Chanukah story? We sometimes talk about Chanukah as if we defeated the Greeks. It's true that we defeated the Greeks in terms of the ability to defend ourselves. It's true that we defeated the Greeks in terms of our ability to maintain our own practices, but did we defeat the Greeks in terms of, actually overwhelming victory over everything they represented? No. In fact, not only politically, by the way, we know that the Jewish kings, the Hashmonai kings, who subsequently took the throne, actually had nice working relationships with the Greek kingdoms, and then subsequently with the Romans who came after them. But it's not just about, politics, and it's not just about who's ruling. It's about culture as well, because part of the war of Chanukah was not just a political war, but it was a cultural war as well. It was a war against extreme Hellenism. It was a war against this ideology that believed that every culture was inferior to Greek culture, and therefore had to give way to Greek culture, including Jewish culture. And the Hashmonaim, and a lot of the Jews, fought a war against that culture as well. And on a cultural level, did we defeat Hellenism? Did Hellenism go away? And the answer is, Hellenism did not go away, not from the world broadly. We still live in a world of Hellenism of some sort or another. And even within Eretz Israel, the Hellenistic inclination didn't go away in the aftermath of Chanukah. Many Jews, pious Jews, religious Jews, adopted Greek language, adopted Greek dress, adopted all kinds of cultural aspects. And even before Chanukah, by the way, plenty of Jews were accepting Hellenism. It was only once they got to like radical Hellenism, they wanted to do away with Judaism entirely, that the Hashmonaim and so on revolted. But even the Hashmonaim themselves, by the way, were not immune. What are the names? Let's see. I mean, everybody's on mute, but if you're not on mute, what were the names of Matityahu's five sons, the Maccabees? Right, so we know
Yehuda,
Yehuda, Yochanan, Yonatan, Shimon, Eliezer, right? We know this because when we were kids, probably we had that song that we all listened to in kindergarten over and over again, that round, right? Eliezer, eldest son. I don't know if you did it. I did. Ad nauseum for years. I think if not for that song, I probably would have forgotten the names of the Hashmonai sons by now. So those are the right Eliezer, Shimon, Yochanan, Yonatan, and Yehuda. Nice Jewish names. Fast forward two generations. What are the names of the Hasmonean rulers of Eretz Israel? If you can just mute yourselves. Sorry, I'm not the host, so I can't mute. So if people can mute themselves, that'd be great. Fast forward two generations. What are the names of the Hasmonean kings? Hyrcanus, Aristobulus. These are not Yochanan and Yonatan anymore. These are not, Eliezer and Yehuda any longer. These are Greek names, and we know that the Hashmonai kings adopted Hellenistic court life. They adopted Hellenistic culture, and so the question is, if that's the case, if Hellenism remains rampant in the aftermath of Hanukkah, if the Greek empires are still powerful in the aftermath of Hanukkah, what in the name of God are we celebrating? I want to share with you a very nice teaching from the Tivot Shalom, a Hasidic sefer that it came out in the 90s. The Slonim Rebbe, who wrote some very, very nice svarim on Chumash and on holidays and on various other topics. The Tivot Shalom, he bases this on a Gemara in Masechet Sota. I gave you the source of the Gemara here. We don't have to read the Gemara, but we could jump down to the Nesivos Shalom, which is the thing that looks like crudely photocopied rather than copied out of the Bar Ilan Tzidi. He makes a distinction. I'll read you the Hebrew, then I'll sort of, as you say, farteich it. Hinei b'metziut ha'or yesh bet b'chinot. K'mo sh'darshu chazal al ha'pasuk ki ner mitzvah v'torah or. Sh'ha'mitzvah hi k'madlik ner b'cheshkat laila. Sh'hi he'ara mikomit b'toch mitziut shel choshech. V'torah or hi b'chinat he'ir hayom. Sh'nithapech mimitziut shel choshech v'nihi ha'or. Let me translate that into English. Sometimes light is transformative. It goes into a dark space and it transforms that dark space into a light space. Sometimes the sun rises and the darkness of night is gone. Sometimes when there's darkness, what we want to do is vanquish the darkness. And that's one type of light, says the Nativo Shalom. But he says there's another type of light as well. The other type of light is represented by the word ner. What is ner? A ner doesn't transform. A ner doesn't vanquish darkness. You know the song, Ba Nuchoshech Ligarish. So that's not what happened. A ner illuminates. The darkness remains. However, there's a little space of light that illuminates that one small area within the darkness. And on Chanukah, we're commanded not to create a large fire, not to make a menorah, not to make an avukah. Not only are we not making a medura, not only are we not making an avuka, if you do, you're not yotze the mitzvah of Chanukah. You're only yotze with a ner, with one single, individual, lonely candle standing alone in the darkness, or even with a few candles standing alone in the darkness. But the point is that the ner Chanukah has to be distinct, individual candles, because on Chanukah, we recognize something very, very important. What was the war of Chanukah about? What was the war against Hellenism about? It wasn't about our desire to transform the entire world. It wasn't about our desire or our attempt to make Hellenism go away. Chazal say very famously, V'choshech ze Yavan. Hellenism, Greece, that's symbolized by darkness. What happens when there's darkness? Well, you have two choices. You could try to vanquish it, or you could try to live alongside it and illuminate as much as you can within it. And what the Nativot Shalom is telling us, and what I think we see from the various sources that talk about Chanukah, the mitzvah of Chanukah is ner, it's one candle. The mitzvah is not to vanquish, it's to illuminate. The mitzvah is not to make darkness go away, it's to accept the fact that there is darkness in the world, and to learn to find our way through the darkness with our candles. That's ner. Now, Chazal tell us, let's move on to the second part, that the ner has to be ner, Ishu Beito. How do we illuminate? That's the question. That's the second clause of that statement. How do we bring about that illumination to the world? If we can't take over the world, if we can't transform the world, if we can't make all darkness, both literal and metaphorical, go away, so what can we do? We can illuminate by means of, Chazal say, Ish Ubeito. What does that mean, Ish Ubeito? This is the second part of our discussion. Now, if you look at the screen, at the sheet that I gave you, the Gemara says, where do we put the Ner Chanukah? Very famously, Tanu Rabbanan, Ner Chanukah mitzvah lahanicha al petach beito mibachutz. Where do we put the Ner Chanukah? On the door or near the door, outside. What does that mean? Near the door of our house, but outside. On one hand, it's outside. On the other hand, it's by the door of our house. If you look at Rashi on that Gemara, I didn't give it to you on the sheet, but Rashi on that Gemara says, al petach beito mibachutz. You don't put it in the Rishut HaRabim. In other words, you don't bring your menorah out to a street. And this is not meant to be a polemic against any particular group of people who do wonderful things. But we don't bring our chanukiyot out to the street, our ner chanukah. We don't bring our ner chanukah out to the field to try to illuminate the field. We put it near the entrance to our homes, but outside. V'im haya dar ba'aliyah, if you lived on the higher floor, menicha b'chalon as muchal reshut harabim, you put it by the window that opens up into the reshut harabim. What are these two spaces? Petach beito mibachutz, or aliyah? These two spaces are these liminal spaces where the inside and the outside meet. It's a space where we, on one hand, walk out of our homes and encounter the outside world. On the other hand, walk from the outside world into our homes. In other words, the Ner Chanukah is meant to be closely affiliated with our homes, but still a little bit outside. Look at the next source. Amar Rabba, very famous again. Ner Chanukah mitzvah lahanicha betefach hasmuchala petach. The Ner Chanukah should be put in the tefach that's closest to the door. Just jump to the middle of the next line. V'hilchata, where exactly do we put it? Mismol, on the left-hand side. Why? Kedei shehei Ner Chanukah mismol, mezuzah miyamin. You're walking into the house, right? You're facing your house. Chanukah candles on your left side. Mezuzah is on your right side. You're standing in the middle, famously, say other sources. But what does that mean again? The mezuzah and the Ner Chanukah both occupy that space. They're both the signifiers. They both tell us you're about to enter into a Jewish home. And again, not just on a cultural level, but on a religious level as well. What they tell us is we're about to come in. To be in literally means something and metaphorically means something. Look at, by the way, just go back to the previous source, Ubishata Sakana. If there's a sakana, if you can't put your chanukiah outside, you put it al hashulchan v'dayo, you put it on the table and that's sufficient. What is that telling us? What it's telling us is there's something special about the Jewish home. There's something special about the Jewish family. There's something special about the values that we represent. There's something special about who we are as a people, and that is the way that we illuminate. When we want to bring about the illumination of Ner Chanukah, what do? We don't go out into the middle of the streets. We put it by the entrance to our homes. We say essentially that we have something special here. We have something unique here, and it's something that we believe can contribute to, can illuminate, can uplift the world. But it's more than that. It goes to our fundamental identity. The mezuzah is there, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad on one side. The Ner Chanukah is there on the other side. What we're saying is this is a desire to illuminate the world based on what is on the inside is fundamental to who we are. It's essentially a part of who we are. Again, this means on a literal level, the Jewish family is meant to illuminate the world. We're meant to reflect our values. We're meant to inform and uplift the world. But it also on a metaphorical, spiritual, symbolic level as well. I gave you a couple of excerpts from Rav Kook here. I don't know if we have enough time to read them all entirely. But I'll summarize them for you. Rav Kook specifically relates to the word bayit in the context of the Beit HaMikdash. These are two passages from Rav Kook. The first one talks about the fact that there's a Gemara that says that Avraham referred to the Makom HaMikdash, the place of the Beit HaMikdash, as a har. Yitzchak referred to it as a sadeh. Yaakov referred to it as a bayit, as a house. Right? And essentially what Rav Kook says is what's a har versus sadeh versus bayit? Har and sadeh are both open spaces. They're both public spaces. They're both spaces that are accessible to everyone. And his Avraham, Yitzchak, they had sort of these universalizing tendencies. Avraham, we know, was a universalist. Avraham wanted to spread the word of monotheism to everyone. Yitzchak very much wanted Esav to be part of the Kedusha of Klal Yisrael. Yaakov doesn't define the space as a har, and he doesn't define the space as a sadeh. He defines the space as a bayit. What sets a bayit apart is that it has walls. What sets a bayit apart is that it has defined boundaries. What sets a bayit apart is that it contains that which is within it. And Rav Kook says that's what makes Yaakov unique, and that's why Yaakov is the one whose designation of that space becomes the Beit HaMikdash. Right? It's a house. It's a defined space because we want to focus on developing the sanctity of Klal Yisrael. However, says Rav Kook, once we develop the sanctity of Klal Yisrael, then we want to take it to the next level and we want to illuminate outward. And I gave you something very beautiful, another passage from Rav Kook, based on also Gemara here in the context of Chanukah. Rav Sheshet asks, Michutz leparochet ha'edut ya'aruch. The menorah of the Beit HaMikdash was outside of the parochet. So you have the menorah here, the Kodesh HaKodeshim there. Sound familiar? The menorah occupying a space somewhere between the outside and the inside, somewhere between a more public space and a very private space. But then the Gemara says, wait a minute, why is it that we had a menorah in the Beit HaMikdash Bechlal? V'chila orahu tzarich? Does God require light? V'halo kol arba'im shana shalchu b'nei Yisrael ba'midbar lo halchu el oro. For the entire 40 years of B'nai Yisrael were in the Midbar, they only walked by God's light. God illuminates everything. God can illuminate the entire Klal Yisrael. So why would we need to put a lamp, a candelabrum, into the Beit HaMikdash? Ela edut hi l'bai olam, says the Gemara, shashchina shora b'Yisrael. Where Rav Kook says is putting the menorah outside of the Kodesh HaKodashim tells us the following. It's true that the light of Torah is sufficient to illuminate the whole world, but the light of Torah is an internal light. It's a light that belongs to Klal Yisrael. And what we need is a light that can occupy the space outside of the Kodesh HaKodeshim as well. What we need is that light that occupies a space on the other side of the parochet as well. What we need is the light of the menorah, which is a smaller light. It's a contained light. In fact, the light of the menorah is a light of a ner. It's a light of a candle. And that's the light that we need to make our broader, greater internal light accessible to the whole world. And Rav Kook says that's our message. It's true that we define our space as a bayit. It's contained. It has walls and boundaries. It's on a metaphorical level. It's true that we want to foster and nurture and develop the internal kedusha of Klal Yisrael. And that's very much what Chanukah is all about, is developing that internal kedusha of Am Yisrael. When it's dark outside, physically and metaphorically, when Greece rules, when Hellenism is the dominant culture, when you can't make Hellenism go away, what do? You focus on creating the identity of Klal Yisrael, the theology of Klal Yisrael, the Torah of Klal Yisrael, and then you just reflect that outward. And that's mitzvah Chanukah, ner, ishu beito. It's a ner. It's a small candle. It's a small light. And what it reflects is the bayit. What it reflects is what is internal to us. What it reflects is our most fundamental values. I want to show you something really, really cool before we go back to the Rambam. Let's see if you can see this here. Boom. My wife is a PhD in Jewish history. When she was in graduate school, When she was in graduate school, she got involved with a project of a certain very wealthy individual who wanted to create different online platforms to learn Jewish history. It didn't really take off, but one of the things, you know, he gave her, probably other participants in the program, was he gave us some antiquities. This is an ancient Judean oil lamp, which is very cool. Right now, if you look at it, it looks very crude. But by the way, this is, when Chazal talk about a ner, this is a ner. Right? They didn't have wax candles. They had these. Each individual oil lamp was a ner. So ner ishu beito meant you were putting one of these outside of your door. But again, what is this? It's just sort of like a bowl with a pinched nose over here for you to put the wick here. You can see like that, right? When you think about a candle, the Chanukah, an oil lamp from ancient Judea, you look at the last source on your page here, it's on the screen. This is an oil lamp that was found in Qumran. When you go to a tourist shop in Yerushalayim and you want to buy a knockoff antiquities, this is what you're buying, right? You're not buying what I'm holding in my hands here, which is an actual antiquity. You're buying what's on the screen in front of you because it's much cooler. It's much nicer, right? It has a thing. What are these? So a study came out. This is fascinating. This past summer was published an academic study by two scholars in Bar-Ilan. One is named Eyal Regev, who was a professor in Bar-Ilan. The other is named Omri Abadi, who I believe was a graduate student in Bar-Ilan. And they study material culture and identity in Eretz Yisrael during the time of the second Beit HaMikdash. And they discover, this guy Omri Abadi, just in parentheses, he studies the cultural significance of burial customs. We're not going to talk about that. one of the things that they spoke about in this article they published about a year ago is the significance of Judean oil lamps, specifically the time of the Chashmonaim. Because before the time of the Chashmonaim, Jews had already begun adopting, you know, this nice, pretty, and convenient Greek way of making oil lamps for their homes. So what you see on the screen in front of you, what was found in Qumran, even though Qumran was later than the Chashmonaim, was something that the, you know, average person might have had. In the time of the Hasmoneans specifically, they stopped using those, started using these. What's significant about these? These are similar to oil lamps that we have from the Bayit Rishon period. And what they say in this article is that the Jews, and again, this is an academic article, not like a drasha from a shul, the Jews in the time of the Chashmonaim wanted to go back to the way that things were done in the Bayit Rishon. Why? Because they wanted to assert their identity as Jews. I'm going to put this down. They wanted to assert their identity. They wanted to connect to the legacy of Malchut Beit David. They wanted to connect to the ancient legacy of the Jews of Eretz Israel and set themselves apart from the Chashmonaim, which means that the Ner of Hanukkah, this Ner, like Mezuzah, like the Jewish home, is literally a signifier of Jewish identity. It's literally a signifier of who we are. And that's Ner Ish Ubeito. What we're trying to do on Hanukkah is to understand that the darkness persists and that the darkness exists and that we're not necessarily going to vanquish the darkness. But what we can do is illuminate a little bit by means of who we are. Illuminate a little bit by first strengthening ourselves, our bayit, and then shining it outwards, then reflecting it outwards by putting the Ner by our own homes. And that helps me a little bit. I want to go back for a second to the Rambam. Again, you know, we're yeshiva people, so we always have to start and end with the Rambam, right? So we started with two questions that about the Rambam. One is, why does he end the first halakha, the real historical introduction to the story of Hanukkah, with those three seemingly melancholy words, Ad HaChurban HaSheni, Chazra Malchut LiYisrael, we reestablish Jewish sovereignty until the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. What's the point of saying that? Well, I think the point of saying that for the Rambam is to tell us that the establishment of Jewish sovereignty under the Chashmonaim is the story of Hanukkah. And the story of Hanukkah is a story that has a little bit of melancholy to it. It has a little bit of understanding that the Greeks are not gone. It has a little bit of understanding that Hellenism is not fully gone, that it's something we're going to always have to contend with, that the circumstances are not always perfect, the circumstances are not always ideal, and the story of Hanukkah is learning how to persist and how to reflect who you are and how to continue to develop the greatness of Klal Yisrael even within those circumstances. And so the Rambam tells us, yeah, there was a Churban Bayit Sheni. Yeah, the story didn't end. But you should know that the Chazra Malchut Yisrael, the reestablishment of Jewish sovereignty, was significant in and of itself, even if it was finite, even if it didn't endure beyond 200 years, even if it didn't endure beyond the Churban of the second Beit HaMikdash, the Malchut that was reestablished was significant because it's kind of like the Ner Chanukah. It's kind of like that one candle that exists, that shines, that illuminates within the darkness. And so even though there was a Churban, the Malchut itself was significant. And that's also, I think, if you go back with our second question about the Rambam, why does he emphasize the Pitchei Abatim? Why does he emphasize that it has to be, again, when he's giving an overview, when he's giving a, you know, sort of broad conceptual introduction to Hanukkah rather than a particular detailed list of Hilchot Hanukkah, why does he emphasize that the candles are lit al Pitchei Abatim? The answer is because it's not just a detail, but that's fundamental to what Hanukkah is all about. The light that's by the door to the house. The light that reflects who we are. The light that reflects the Kedushah of Klal Yisrael that's inside, but that interacts with the outside. That's inside, but that wants to reflect our values to the outside. That's the story of what Hanukkah is. That's the story of the Ner Hanukkah. And so when we say Hanukkah is not the festival of lights, what do we mean? What I mean is, light is a concept. Light is an idea. Light is the opposite of darkness. Hanukkah is a festival of candles. Hanukkah is a festival of individual candles that stand alone, that stand in the darkness, that illuminate, that tell us this is what Klal Yisrael is. Klal Yisrael is something great. Klal Yisrael has something to say to the world and continues to shine our light outward, to share who we are outward, to hope that our values uplift everybody outward. And Bezrat Hashem, that's something that helps us, I think, to me at least, make it through these nights of Hanukkah with a deeper more fundamental understanding of what exactly it is that we're trying to do. And so I'll end by wishing everybody a nice, Brooklyn greeting for my youth, Lichtige Chanukah, right? We wish everybody a lot of light. Chanukah Sameach, a Chanukah full of light, but knowing what the nature of that light is. Anybody, questions, comments, thoughts?
Thank you very much.
Criticisms.
Thank you.
Refutations. Thank you, everybody. Chanukah Sameach.
You too. Thank you.